Jeffrey Deitch opened his influential Soho Gallery Deitch Projects in 1996, and it quickly became the headquarters for a generation of young artists fusing the worlds of art, fashion, music, and pop culture into groundbreaking performances and installations. But he closed it to become the director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles in 2010. And then 3 years later, he resigned from that post, and rumors abound about what his next move will be. Meanwhile, he has published a stunning coffee table book recounting the history of his gallery titled Live the Art, 15 Years of Deitch Projects. It's from Rizzoli, and I'm delighted to welcome Jeffrey Deitch to our show today. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard. I'm very happy to be here.
Your book opens with the line, Deitch Projects was not meant to be an art gallery. What did you want it to be?
Well, a social and artistic platform. So it was more of a private institute of contemporary art than a conventional profit-making gallery.
And is that why you called it Deitch Projects rather than the Deitch Gallery?
Yes, that's one of the reasons.
Were you trying to break away from the traditional gallery model?
Oh, I'm very enthusiastic about the traditional gallery model. And
the art store, in effect.
But I wanted to do something different. And the main motivation was I would visit artists, and often artists would have some special project that they wish they were able to do and that wouldn't fit into the conventional gallery structure. So the idea was to give artists a platform to realize this dream.
Well, you write that your mantra for Deitch Projects was, I will not show any more boring art, which is easy to say. But also, isn't one person's exciting art the next person's boring art?
That's true. The audience is diverse, and I'm very open to all the different interpretations.
Although you do also say that the worst thing an artist hoping for a show can do is drop off a sheet of slides at a gallery. What did they have to do to make an impression on you?
Well, I always tried to find artists through an organic process. And it was connecting with centers of energy. So someone would tell me, there's a very lively scene at this bar, and you should go. Or this club is really happening. And I would go there and maybe meet one artist. And artists, good artists, always find each other. So there are isolated talents working on their own, but most good artists form a community. And my goal was to connect with some of these dynamic communities and give them a platform.
At first, were you looking for artists who had never had a solo show in New York before?
That was the original criteria.
Later, of course, you changed that.
Well, art is all about breaking rules, so it didn't take us long to break the rules.
But these were all people who had ambitious projects that no other commercial gallery would be willing to tackle.
At that time, things have changed. The gallery system is more open now. But in those days, most galleries showed artists 10 new paintings or sculptures on pedestals.
In hopes of selling them.
That's right. And I was lucky that I was able to have a different model because I was always active as an art advisor and private art dealer. And that part of the business subsidized Deitch Projects.
So you didn't see Deitch Projects as a business?
No, I didn't. But the way it worked as a business is that I still believe that if I can create excitement, excite artists, excite collectors, it's going to result in business.
You provided your artists with a stipend of $25,000 to fund their projects. Were they ever able to sell the resulting works, or do those resulting works then lead to other kinds of sales?
Well, so the original intention was that I would give each artist $25,000 in production funds. And if we didn't sell the project, I would just keep it. But what happened is almost all the early projects did sell.
Well, how did they sell? Because so many of them involved people. Like the first show you had was women in underwear wearing the same wigs.
That was Vanessa Beecroft. It was a great work of Vanessa Beecroft. But what happened there is people were very enthusiastic about this. We sold video. We sold the photo works that document the show. Vanessa made some accompanying drawings, paintings, which all sold. So actually, from the very beginning, we covered our costs and even made a little money.
And you were hoping, I'm assuming, to make an immediate splash with a show like that as well. A lot of the early projects involved nudity or other controversial subjects. Were you consciously trying to provoke the people who came
no.
to the gallery?
No, it's just...
Can I call it a gallery?
Sure. It was
or
just,
galleries?
I was just responding to what I thought was the freshest and most exciting work. Vanessa Beecroft, my interest started by seeing a little photographic reproduction in flash art. And the image was so strong, I said, I just drawn to this. And I wanted to find out more. And so it was based on what I thought was exciting, not because I thought it would be provocative.
Hadn't you created some performances yourself?
I did. In the 70s. Yes. Yes. The work that was best known for was creating arguments on the street.
Now, you went to Soho. This was before Chelsea became the art center of New York. How did you find that garage space at 76 Grand Street that became Deitch Projects?
Well,
Did it have a history? Had it been a gallery before?
Yes. So I write about this in the book. So
well, that's why I asked the question.
Right. So I moved to Soho in 1974 and worked for a great gallery, John Weber Gallery, that represented some of the great minimal conceptual Art de Pauvre artists. And I just was enthralled by Soho. Beautiful preserved district, and just fascinating. And a lot of the art dialogue just took place on the streets at all hours. And so I would walk around Soho frequently. You know, almost every night I would take a stroll around Soho. And I remember seeing this intriguing one-story building on Grand Street. At the time, it was a luncheonette in front and a curtain workshop in the back. And I thought, this would be a wonderful gallery. But at the time, these ground floor garage galleries didn't exist yet. Most of the good galleries were on the second floor. And eventually, that space did become a gallery. It became the Forbush Gallery, which is an excellent gallery, one of the best galleries of the early 90s, showed Kiki Smith, Christian Marclay. And I was very friendly with Joe. And when he died prematurely, his partner knew that I loved the space and offered it to me.
And the rest is history, as they say. My guest is Jeffrey Deitch. His book, we'll talk a bit about this book after we take a little break, is called Live the Art, 15 Years of Deitch Projects. It's from Pizzoli, and it's very, very heavy. How much does it weigh?
I haven't weighed it.
We're going to bring in a scale and tell you later. And we are back with Jeffrey Deitch, whose book, Live the Art, 15 Years of Deitch Projects, has been published by Rizzoli. And this is a fascinating book to look at. Well, lots of fabulous pictures and on special stock in some cases. But I have to ask you about the cover, which appears to have a dinner plate stuck to it. Is that intended as a metaphor?
Well, I think it represents the generous spirit we try to project at the gallery. So the book is designed by Stefan Sagmeister, who's one of the great graphic designers. And Stefan was one of the artists we showed at the gallery. And one of the hallmarks of the gallery was our desire to open up the definition of who is an artist. So some people might say, well, Stefan Sagmeister, he's a graphic designer, not an artist. But we showed Stefan as an artist. And in asking him to design the book, I asked him to create essentially the final Deitch project, to create the book as a sculpture, which I think it is.
We also probably could eat from it.
Well,
and the book is filled with food for thought.
Well, we had a launch party where, in fact, we had made 500 extra covers, and we served a cake on the book cover.
Many of your artists didn't come from fine arts backgrounds, but from skateboard culture, graffiti art, music, fashion, film. So you were consciously expanding the boundaries of what we consider art. Many of the things you did do not seem all that out of the ordinary. But at the time, how do people respond?
I think that the art world is very, particularly the New York art audience, is very sophisticated, very open. And basically, if the work is good, people will embrace it. If the work is thin, then people will be skeptical. But when we showed Michel Gondry, filmmaker, as an artist, the work was exceptional. And the audience responded, and the critics responded. And that particular show went from our gallery to the Centre Pompidou in Paris.
A teacher at FIT, I'm reading this, so I'm slightly confused by it, but maybe you'll understand. It says, a teacher at FIT had a former Abigail Deville, and Jeffrey Deitch gave her a start by showing her work, and that's been life-changing.
Well, Abigail is a wonderful artist. So Abigail was standing in line to audition for a reality show that we produced around the gallery called Art Star. People lined up, 300 people lined up early morning, the freezing cold. And Abigail was so distinctive because she still does. She dresses herself like she's an extension of her sculpture. And so we cast her in the show, and she was still a student then. The work was so striking, one of the great European collectors came in a segment of the show and bought the piece. And that helped to launch her. And I've stayed a big supporter of her work since.
And you've showed a lot of women. There are always complaints that the art world is dominated by males. Even a famous European artist recently said that men are just better artists than women, which outraged every woman artist I know. But you showed a lot of women artists, that must have been a conscious attempt to redress some of the inequities of the art world.
It wasn't conscious at all. It was just simply responding to what was exciting. And I remember reading a year and a half into the gallery a review by Roberta Smith, you know, who's very rigorous and tough. And she commented her amazement that in a year and a half or so of operation, my gallery had yet to show a white male.
Or a painter.
I was stunned by this. But in fact, it was correct. But it wasn't, there wasn't any social or political agenda. I really was following what I thought was fresh and exciting.
And you didn't show paintings or sculpture, at least for the first year.
We had, we inherited these racks in the back of the gallery from Forbush. And for 2 years or so, the racks remained empty because we hadn't showed any paintings. We showed painting in a different form. Jessica Diamond, great conceptual painter, did mural paintings on the wall that following a conceptual practice. But paint on canvas and stretched, no, we hadn't done that.
When you discovered artists, I'm thinking of somebody like Cecily Brown, who then moved on to Gagosian. How did you feel about that?
Well, that was sad. We had a very special relationship with Cecily, and it was a special circumstance. Before we opened up the Worcester Street Gallery as a public space, I gave it to her as a studio. It gave me the opportunity to visit her almost every afternoon, and it was a great dialogue.
You had two galleries at that point, or two spaces.
We hadn't opened the Worcester Street space to the public yet, But the talent keeps coming. So some people move on, but make other discoveries. And so I learned that going on, not to get into a rut of disappointment, because New York City is remarkable, all the talent that's attracted, and they're great artists of every generation.
And you said that you wanted to create a community around Deitch projects. Do you feel you succeeded?
I think we did. There were people come up to me and say, I met my wife or my husband at your opening. And we actually did create a community. It was when we had our book party, it was wonderful to have about 500 people who felt that they were connected.
Now, some of the artists were well-known. The first show at the Worcester Street space was Barbara Kruger, who was already well-known. And then later you did show some white males, like Paul McCarthy, David Salley, Francesco Clementi, Jonathan Borofsky, and posthumously Jean-Michel Basquiat and Keith Haring. But then you closed the spaces and moved to Los Angeles in 2010 to become the director of the Museum of Contemporary Art. Was it just the offer too tempting to refuse, or had you gotten bored with Deitch projects?
Well, I'm always interested in new opportunities. That's part of the spirit. And so it's one of the reasons the gallery was run in an unconventional way. I didn't want to give artists their fourth show, fifth show, sixth show. I was interested in moving on to new things. And, of course, that was an amazing opportunity to be able to direct the Museum of Contemporary Art.
What shape was the museum in when you arrived?
It was a troubled institution, and so many people warned me, don't go near it.
Well, they must have been warned about you as well. They must have known what they were getting.
Well, of course, I'm an open book. Many people in the Los Angeles community embraced what I was doing, were very supportive, but it was not an easy situation, and was able to do some great exhibitions that were very popular and some important publications, but essentially I had enough and realized that I could create exciting exhibitions on my own without being harnessed with all of the museum bureaucracy and all the issues. So that's really what I'm working on now.
Did you have different ideas about what kinds of shows you should be mounting than the museum's curators did?
I felt that I was very supportive of the curators. They all got to realize the dream shows they had been working on for years. So I think there's a lot of misinterpretation of what happened. But essentially, I'm very interested in a more open approach, a more open museum like I did in the gallery. I love the public coming in. I like to connect the different creative fields. And it's a bit in opposition with MoCA's tradition that comes more out of the conceptual art tradition.
Your first show there was of work by the actor Dennis Hopper, who had died just a few months before. How was that received?
Well, I thought it was a marvelous show. Julian Schnabel curated it, did a beautiful poetic installation. The public who came loved it, and a lot of attendance, but a kind of intellectual elite used that against me, that, well, Dennis was not a really serious artist. But the whole point was that he was a remarkable cultural figure who was a great innovator across a group of creative fields.
Now, in an institution like that, or any large institution, you have to answer to a board of trustees, and you had just come from running your own gallery in a totally free-form way. You must have felt a bit constricted at times.
Well, so I wanted to continue that approach of being free, of open, of realizing a vision, connecting with other people whose vision I shared. The problem wasn't so much with Board of Trustees. It was some other constituents who were resistant to this more open approach.
Are you now back in New York full time, or are you still living in that house that was once owned by Cary Grant?
Well, I kept the house in Los Angeles. I'm going there next week. I've made the house into an art installation, so it's something very special. It's no longer just a house, but I'm fully back in New York and have reestablished my exhibition office and art advisory office, and we're actively developing some new projects.
You still own the building on Worcester Street.
Yes, it's now rented to the Swiss Institute.
And what happened to the Grant Street space?
Well, I'm taking that back as my exhibition office.
Uh-huh. But there are rumors that you're looking at spaces in Red Hook and even on the proposed new pier on Hudson and 14th Street.
I am looking at different spaces, and what's happened is that some wonderful spaces have been offered to me on a short-term basis by real estate developers where they feel that what I can bring will help make their properties more exciting and enhance the value, so it's good for everybody.
Well, it's the pop-up approach that
That's
has become
correct.
Very popular
That's
recently.
Correct.
But is that are you ready to go back to Deitch projects, or would you want to do something totally
no,
different?
No, the focus now is rather than doing 30 exhibitions a year, to do one very ambitious exhibition a year. Mm-hmm. And the project I'm most excited about now is Overpop, which is a survey of new art I find most exciting. And I'm always looking to find a pattern, what do the artists I'm most excited about have in common.
Well, the whole art scene has changed so much, the art gallery scene. Today, art galleries really rely on art fairs a lot more than on people coming in and buying their painting off the wall. So do you think that we're going to continue seeing permanent galleries that show 10 shows, 12 shows a year?
Well, the art gallery scene in New York City is more lively than it's ever been, and it's just something remarkable. Within a period of a few years, there are 50 or more galleries on the Lower East Side, many galleries in Brooklyn. And so it's thriving. Even though it's under a lot of pressure, it's something that people are motivated to do. And I think there are more good galleries in New York now than I've ever experienced.
And I hope you'll keep me apprised of your future plans.
Thank you. I will.
Meanwhile, we have this book, Live the Art, 15 Years of Deitch Projects, written by Jeffrey Deitch and designed by Stefan Sagmeister. It's from Rizzoli. It's been a pleasure talking with you and reading this book.
A pleasure, Leonard. Thank you very much.